Start wearing purple, wearing purple. Start wearing purple for me now. All your sanity and wits, they will all vanish, I promise. It's just a matter of time. So yeah, start wearing purple, wearing purple.
Start wearing. Welcome to Paper Money, the bi-weekly podcast covering the business side of the game industry, from risk to Rune Wars, Parker Brothers to Fantasy Flight Games. I'm Ben Clark, Director of Product Development at Imagigraphics.
And I'm Rhett Kitt.
Today is February 19th, 2010. Hello, Purple Pawn Readers.
Hey, hi. How are you doing there, Purple Pawn Readers?
So I guess, oh, now they're Purple Pawn listeners, but this is our first show hosted on the Purple Pawn website, so welcome everyone who found us that way. And I'd also like to do a special welcome to everyone who was a recipient of one of the cards that I carpet-bombed the New York Toy Fair with. Thank you also for joining us this week. Oh, I thought you were going to say something pithy there. I apologize, Red.
Well, pithy's for later.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, let's move right into the news then.
I'm sorry. I've been dying to do that.
That's okay. Now we'll do the real news theme. And this week in the news, Spielbox magazine coming out in English, this story from the Purple Pawn. Spielbox is a glossy German magazine on board and card games. It's going to be available in English for the first time. It's going to cost $70 US, and that's for 7 issues, but the shipping is coming from overseas. Now, just for your information, it's a magazine, but it's occasionally got a game expansion inserted into the magazine, so die-cut counters or cards or something like that. And I was able to talk to Spielbox rep Will Niebling at New York Toy Fair, and he says he was actually unsure what he was going to be able to comment on or not. And one of the issues is that it sounds like that shipping charge is up in the air a little bit. So that's good news.
Yeah, you know, but $10 an issue for a magazine is not that unusual for Euro magazines. There's a lot now coming into the country that are hitting that price range.
Well, I think it is interesting. This would be the first non-House Organ magazine to hit the streets in quite some time. We lost Dungeon and Dragon. We lost Scry.
Yeah, we've seen most of them gone. You know, as you say, there's a few of them out there, but they tend to be, you know, purely related to one company's product lines, with the possible exception of Paizo's. The Cobol, I believe, is the title of that magazine, which does cover more role-playing aspects than I think just their Pathfinder.
Is that Kobold Quarterly? I don't think that's that way. I think I'm thinking of something else there. But you know, really, I mean, the last general interest magazine, game review magazine I remember is Moves. You know, I mean, it's been See, you've been around long enough to remember Moves. It's been a while since we've had a general, since we've had a high quality print, you know, game review magazine. So interesting story coming out there from our good buddies at Games Workshop. Apparently, we've got a first look at Warhammer Fantasy 8th Edition. This story from the Purple Pawn, they credit a couple of other sources, which I apologize I don't have in the show notes. But Warhammer Fantasy 8th Edition, there are two things here that every Warhammer player needs to know. One, a return to percentage-based army composition is in the works. And two, they're overhauling the magic system. I still can't say that with a straight face, right? That's the second time we've done this take. They always overhaul the magic system.
It's usually the first thing that gets redone for some reason or another.
And but, you know, you were saying that percentage-based army composition is also going to basically ruin every codex on the market.
I was going to say it'll change all the codex. It require changes to every codex. They'll be less playable than they have been previously. Though one of the, you know, there's a couple other notes in here about things that they are going to be doing. The gist of it though is, they're not dumbing it down. They're actually complicating 8th edition. I guess they think their audience is older.
And it could very well be. But anyways, we'll talk more about Warhammer Fantasy in our special miniatures show, which is coming up fairly soon. But for now, it's enough to know that there's an 8th edition in the works. And I think we were thinking, June is going to be the target release on that?
That's our guess. Yeah, they follow their standard pattern. It'll be summer release, which typically is June.
Okay. And also, this is more news out of Toy Fair. Lego board games are coming to the U.S. Lego is planning on releasing these games to the U.S. in 2010. Prices will range from $10 to $35 and will start releasing in March, with most being released around July. Okay, now I'm going to try and act surprised that a product like this is going to get a July release. I mean, it's a third quarter, you know, Christmas thing, really. But if this is anything like the video games, it's sliced bread.
This is, you know, from everything I've heard about these are really cool. I believe there's a Harry Potter product related to this. Now, I'm not quite sure if that's the electronic piece that's coming from their game line, or if that's actually part of this, since they do have the Harry Potter license, and they have done, you know, some really nice castles and things like that for the Harry Potter line. I do know that one of these is a Pictionary-style game where you know, assemble your Lego into something, and people have to figure out what it is you've created. How can I not fan Lego?
I'm just saying that my son, following my tradition, basically builds a large square and slaps some rectangular pieces sticking out, and it's a plane. So I'm guessing Pictionary with anything, you know, more detailed than plane might be difficult.
Fun is always there. You know, well, there's a lot of cool things about this, you know, and most of your games, when you're kind of bored with them, the best you can do is cannibalize, you know, your dice out of them. You know, this one, you get to cannibalize Lego. This is...
is this going to be like a collectible card game? Can I bring the tub of Legos that I have in the back room to the game?
My guess is it probably will work that way. Yeah, I'm gushing. You know me, but I love construction things. Construction toys, as we pointed out earlier this year, are up. I think this is just a big success story.
Yeah, well, with board games being up, I don't know, call it 6%, and construction toys being up 20%, I think it's a beautiful category. So, moving on, Fantasy Flight Games coming out with Battles of Napoleon, the Eagle and the Lion. This is the first in a series of games covering the various wars of Napoleon. The first title is lavishly produced with 4 boards, 200 plastic miniatures, 120 cards, and I quote, a metric ton of counters. The standard price is going to be $100 US. Now, David Miller and I have been going back and forth on the Purple Pawn. David thinks $100 is awfully high for what appears to be a serious war game. I disagree. I think that they're going to amortize the cost of the plastic over a series of games, and that war gamers used to pay $100.
Yeah, I was going to say, from the war gamers, the hardcore war gamers aspect, I don't think that the $100 is going to, you know, put them off at all. This is huge. Four full boards on this is an enormous size thing. Fantasy Flight production standards, those are mounted boards. You know, this is pretty exciting from that standpoint. The question I have really is, with the 200 plastic pieces, I'm guessing that they're actually after more like the Axis and Allies, the, in a sense, more general interest historical gamer, as opposed to the hardcore historical gamer. It's first in a series. I think that's an interesting position to put yourself into. They're believing this is going to be successful.
Well, it's certainly a big commitment to a Napoleonic war game, of whether it's Axis and Allies complexity or, you know, La Bataille de Quatre Bras. You know, I mean, this is, that's a big commitment to make in this for a mass market. Well, they're not necessarily a mass market company, but you know what I'm saying, right?
Absolutely. But, you know, they do have a lot of Euro partners on this.
Yes.
And, you know, that's going to help them spread the costs out on that as well, increase their print runs, since I'm sure that, you know, there'll be a number of foreign language editions of this. And, you know, I can't say for sure how important the Napoleonic Wars are in Europe, but given that everybody played, you know, and it's not World War II where everybody feels bad about it, you know, this is kind of a cool area, I think, for them to go into. And I certainly don't think the $100 is going to, you know, keep anybody away from a serious gaming aspect.
No, and as someone who purchased Tide of Iron at 90, I don't think the extra $10 for this one is going to do anything to me.
With FFG, we've also just seen, you know, the Rune Wars at the same price, and
yeah,
that's really well. Like I say, I don't think sticker shock is a problem.
No, I don't. That was, in fact, the point I was arguing with David Miller. So Playroom Entertainment has a couple of games out featured on Purple Pawn. Did we mention the Purple Pawn? We're hosted there now. Unspeakable Words, which is their Cthulhu word game. And this is one where you the higher I love the concept. I don't know if the world is ready for a Cthulhu word game, but the higher scoring letters cause you that you score more, but you have they challenge your sanity more. So the idea is, of course, to accrue like 100 points without going insane, which is really any Cthulhu game worth its salt you can go insane in. And that's
the whole point of Cthulhu things is going insane.
That's right. Well, the other game they have out that I think is really interesting is also out featured on the Purple Pawn right now. That's Killer Bunnies and the Ultimate Odyssey. This is a non-collectible, constructible deck game. All right, we've been talking about the living card games and Dominion and the demise, as it were, of the collectible market this year. This is a different from the other Killer Bunnies games in that people are playing off of common decks, or excuse me, off of their own decks rather than a common deck. And again, it lets people to build their deck without having to get and deal with a collectible issue.
Yeah, I think this is a big growth market. I think we're going to continue to see more and more. AEG came into this market already this year. FFG has been there in a sense with their, I think they refer to the living card game series.
Correct.
The Cthulhu, those types of games. I think this is just going to continue to see more and more. People like it when you can, construct a deck, make yourself unique, but you don't have to invest, an arm, a leg, and, your child's tuition for college for 4 years.
Yes, exactly. And you don't end up with with a steamer trunk full of land cards, anyways, I'd like to say David from the Purple Pawn and I were both lucky enough to talk to Playroom Entertainment at the show, and they showed us some games that won't be out till third quarter, and a couple of them looked really cool. I will say that there's at least one that I'm gonna buy, but it's coming out Labor Day, so it might end up in my kid's Christmas stocking. But Playroom had some very interesting titles out at the show. Another one who had some interesting titles out at the show and had a good chance to talk with Don Hicks from Discovery Bay Games. Don's their mass market guy over there. Discovery Bay is about 4 years old, and they've already got 26 titles plus puzzles. They just released at the show, I think, their Saturday Night Live game, and they've got Daryl Hannah was there. Apparently she's designing games now. And so Discovery Big Games, the SNL game I thought was very interesting because it reflected a certain savvy on the part of an up-and-coming company in that the licenses get you in the store.
Yeah, I like these guys. And, as you said previously, this is, I think, an up-and-coming company. I think they're right on the edge of breaking into the big times of mass market too.
I've got them pegged for that. So
yeah.
And finally, maybe we should talk about Toy Fair. So you think they made a little news last week?
I don't know. Did anybody actually attend Toy Fair this year?
Ooh! I did. So the big news from Toy Fair was toys, actually. If you read the mainstream and mass market press, they're going to be filled with stuff about Zuzu pets, and now there's some kind of Zuzu Warriors thing or something for kids, so that your son can now enjoy battling hamsters in addition to your daughter enjoying the collectability of Zuzu pets. But let's talk about the games at New York Toy Fair. The buyers were back this year. The exhibitors were not quite back. I would say that the first floor of the hall, which is where the smaller game companies are concentrated, probably had one or two fewer rows in it. And they had massage stations located strategically throughout the show, I think, to plug gaps. But more to the point, the buyers were back. Last year, the smaller buyers stayed home, and the show as a whole lost a good chunk of that. Even if your big buyers make up 80%, you still, the smaller buyers who represented the other 20% stayed home last year. They were back this year. All the game people were busy writing tickets, and everybody told me they had great shows. Now, I don't think that rising tide floated all boats. I think the bigger game manufacturers had much better shows than the smaller game manufacturers, but that's generally the case. And the toy people told me they had good shows too, but I can't be sure. I don't have as many contacts on the toy side of the industry, but again, I think it's the same case there. The bigger people had great shows, the smaller people had okay shows. Oh, Brett, are you still there? Did I bore you to death?
Yeah, no, you didn't bore me to death. I'm sitting here taking notes and, you know, keeping track of stuff.
Well, good, good. The other things I wanted to mention about the show was that, one, there were more ancillary exhibitors this year than I've seen in a while. So product testing services and product testing equipment were well represented. There were probably at least five companies doing that. We've been talking about the CPSIA over and over and over again. My guess is those guys all booked their booths before the testing deadline got postponed, right, until February of 2011. But
and with the potential of having the laws rewritten.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. By the time the laws rewritten, all those people will be regretting the money they spent to go to New York Toy Fair. That's a joke. And then there was, for the first time, I've never seen an insurance guy there before, but there was at least two companies pitching product insurance for your company. So that was kind of interesting to see. And
that disturbs me in so many ways.
Well, you know, I mean, after, you know, what do you do when kids swallow the magnetic balls that make up magnetics or whatever that click the parts together? And it,
when you forget that, you know, China, in its discretion of preventing you from getting lead poison, sends over cadmium instead.
Every time we talk about cadmium, I'm just like, really? You thought lead was dangerous, so you put cadmium in
it? That's a cadmium.
Yeah, and that's what the insurance guys are playing on.
It can't be too bad for you.
Oh, I don't blame them. I mean, most toy companies are the same as most game companies. They're small outfits, and they have the same, and they have a much higher liability risk.
Absolutely.
We're not making fun of the concept of product insurance, folks. We're just, it's just a shame that you need it because there might be cadmium in your earrings. All right. I think I'm done now. Anyways, had a great, it was a very good show. The show has bounced back. Rich Gottlieb, who I finally got a chance to meet, I've seen him at show after show, but finally had a chance to talk to him. We're going to have him on the show at a later date. And, Rich thinks that the toy industry is ready to bounce back in 2010. He's not sure the rest of the world economy is ready to bounce back, but he thinks that the toy and game industry is ready to bounce back. I thought that was a fun take. And the other thing is, this one is just for David Miller of the Purple Pond. David and I were at Gen Con when Mike Gray was talking up Star Wars Galaxies. Okay, this is coming out it was supposed to come out in the middle of 2010. So at Toy Fair, David goes and talks to Mike Hurdle, who's Mike Gray's boss at Hasbro, and asks him about Star Wars Galaxies. And Mike Hurdle gives him a no comment. And David was very confused by this. So I had a chance to talk to Mike Gray Tuesday night at the Discover Games industry party. And Mike looked at me and said, "It's a movie now." And I'm like, ah, that explains everything. So David, Mike gave you a no comment because it's a movie now. Anyways, it would not be a game convention if I did not make at least one social gaffe. And so, of course, I managed to introduce Mike Gray to Will Niebling, his former boss at TSR. Thank you very much.
I'm sure they've met before.
Yeah. You know, they've both been around the industry 30 years, and I prefaced it with, I'm sure you know Will Niebling, but still.
So, well, you know, that's just because you're one of the young Turks. You're not part of the old guard. You don't remember.
I wish I were so young or Turkish. But again, it was a very good toy fair. And I think that personally, I'm not going to know if it was a successful toy fair for about 6 months because, you know, I'm a printer. So people could call me and quote next week. But until people start producing for fourth quarter, I'm not going to know if it was worth my time to go.
Well, yeah, I completely understand that. And for the, you know, the small manufacturers, they're kind of in the same situation. They may have been talking to people, but they won't know if it was a success until they see, you know, the actual orders being written, which probably isn't until, late spring, early summer. You know, they've gotten out there and they've, you know, touched flesh and talked to people and, you know, maybe gotten some promises, but Most of them won't write orders until, you know, June or so.
That is very true.
It's a long time to tell if, you know, you were really successful at it. Was the money well spent?
Thank you for pointing out to me how long that is. Yeah, but at least I, a little schadenfreude, I can share my suffering with other people.
Well, and the nice thing is, you know, when you do get that, you know, that big order in from, you know, Toys R Us or one of the book chains or whomever, and, you know, it totally makes your print run. Or better still, it makes your print run twice as big.
That's very true. That's very true.
And then you look at that money and go, huh, we're going next year.
And I got to hold Megan, who's the buyer over at Borders Books, I got to hold her coat for like an hour. So I'm like the man.
You
want to get into the book trade, I had Megan's coat. What can I say? Anyways, Rhett, why don't you tell everybody how they can get in touch with us?
Well, we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to get comments and or any questions you might have. You can contact us now at thepurplepawn.com/papermoney, or you can find us at our old home of imagicgraphics.com/podcast. Go ahead and spell that.
Okay, this could be the last time I'm doing this for all of our regular listeners. That's imagigraphx.com.
We need to make that a jingle if we're going to keep that in there, because, you know, everybody will get that tune then. Or you can email us at papermoney@purplepawn.com. You can Skype us at Paper Money Podcast. Or, if you want, you can even call us at 773-634-9377. And we do answer our phones.
That's right. That's right. Well, I was very excited. I was testing some Skype audio stuff yesterday, and I got a call. It was a it was a Spanish robocall. I wish I'd been taping when the call came on, so I could say, "Hey, we got our first listener call on the Skype line." But no, Spanish robocall. And moving on, we would like to hear from you, though, especially a lot of you new listeners. We're always interested in what you guys want to talk about. Brett and I can ramble on and on and on. We've been in the industry long enough that we can do that. But we'd really like to know what you guys are thinking and what you'd like to talk about. So with that said, it's a segue, Red, right? Isn't it? It's the smoothest industry segue ever.
I was going to say, yeah, you just like glass there.
Yeah, it was moving on. That's me, suave. So I had a chance to interview several companies on the floor at Toy Fair, and most of them were really busy, actually. So I did these interviews on Wednesday morning, kept them short, but I have four companies that I talked to. Talked to Looney Labs, I talked to Gridley Games, talked to R&R, and I talked to Calicor. All these are kind of mid-major companies that have been around a while, and I thought would give me a good cross-section, I think, of how the show was going for everybody. So, again, here are my discussions with those four companies at Toy Fair. We're here with Troy Morio of R&R Games. It's Wednesday, so everyone's a little tired of explaining their games today. So you don't have to explain any games to me, but tell me about your product mix. We talked a little bit about this yesterday, and that you guys have – you're kind of known for more of the party games and stuff, but yet you're also doing Masters of Venice and kind of expanding, or
– Yep, that's correct. We actually have always had some strategy games, but they're usually fewer and far between because obviously party games are a little bit easier to market out to the mass market.
Right.
With our newest strategy game, Masters of Venice, we went a little bit more into the European style gaming with more intricate gameplay and pieces involved with it.
Okay, now one of the things you told me about Masters of Venice that I thought was interesting was the price point.
Correct. The price point, we wanted to keep it still an affordable game and not being a high value game that will, you know, only limit our sales to you know, really serious gamers.
Oh, come on! We all love to spend $80 on Agricola.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I can imagine there's great games out there for $80, but we wanted to keep our price point a little bit smaller. We tried to push for the $34.95 price point, which we were able to do with this game. and it's gotten rave reviews, and we're really excited about it.
Yeah, for those of you listening, it looks gorgeous, by the way, and it's at $34.95. Yeah, which for a euro is an outstanding price. So.
Correct.
All right. Well, Troy, I'm glad you had a good show, and like I said, I'll give you my card so you can listen to the show later.
No problem. Thanks.
We're here with Nikki Hancock. What are you, president and CEO of Talicor?
President.
President of Talicor Games. So, Nikki, your big new game here is Stranded.
Mm-hmm.
How's it going at the show? Is it are the new titles selling? Are people ordering the back titles, or is it just new stuff? What's driving the sales this time?
We've actually had a combination of both. With our three new products that we launched this year, we went more for the adult market, which has really helped our line.
Now, by adult, you mean grown-up games, not...
Correct.
Okay.
Grown-up games, not so much the educational side or the children's side.
Okay. So, and Stranded would be one of those. And then Fill in the Bleep, I'm guessing, would also be considered an adult game, I guess,
correct,
at that point? Okay.
Correct.
So, and then what's your other new title?
The other new title that we have is Stop and Go. It's a very fast-paced card game based on colors.
Okay. Excellent. So those three are doing well. And then the back stuff is moving, not moving?
They're doing well. They're doing well. We have some pretty big staples in our line that always seem to do very well for us here. Mm-hmm. Our educational side always has, you know, we have specific stores that always come back to us year after year after year. So our staple line is doing well, as well as the new products that we have.
Good. So you saw the buyers come back this year after last year's kind of drop off?
Yeah, we've actually had a fantastic show this year.
I've heard that from a lot of the games people, so I'm assuming that's true. I haven't talked to any of the toy people yet, but they seem to be having a good show. So,
yeah, we've had great buyers in, and a lot more engagement from the buyers. Very much more interested, more willing to work with gameplay to actually see the new games, which is nice.
Well, you know, with the games segment taking off, I think that's really been... The retailers are now interested in it. The guys who were just here for toys, I think, are now looking at the board games. So maybe that's a good thing, I guess.
Yeah, it seems that way. It seems that the electronics are dipping a little bit and board games are coming back strong. So.
Yes, and as a printer, I'd like to say woohoo! Anyways, thank you very much, Nikki. I appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks.
We're here with Risa Schwartzman of Gridley Games in Scenic Isle 6100 at New York Toy Fair. It's Tuesday, so Risa's a little tired after talking nonstop for 3 days. But now, Risa, Gridley Games started out, Gridley Heads Hockey, Gridley Heads Baseball, Gridley Heads Racing, but your new product is a very different direction. Wyzalik is an educational board game. What? That's kind of a big jump for a small company to do, to go from a sports theme to an education theme. How'd that happen?
Well, I actually took over the original Gridley Heads product because I thought it was a great game. But when I started producing my own game, I have a background in education, and I taught for 18 years, and I really wanted to bring a product to market that was family fun and that offered an opportunity to have success at every age and have support, be able to play at home, be able to take it into school, and feel good about yourself and have multiple levels of play. So our games, all of our themes are basically is multiple levels of play and have a good time while you're doing it. So Wyzalik is a family trivia game with a really fun twist, and it brought a good sense of humor. And we actually, because I actually had a background in exercise physiology, we really want to promote healthy and active lifestyles in all our products. And so it really brings that.
So you created board games so everyone would sit down? Is that the...
Yeah, but
take a break from the healthy, active lifestyle?
Well, everybody needs to spend quality time with their family up and down. So.
Okay. So now let me ask you this, though. Are the same people, are you marketing to the same people? Obviously, the customer is going to be a little different from the Gridley Heads line to Wyzalik and the education stuff. Are the same stores buying it, though?
Yes and no.
I mean, obviously, with an education game, there's a little broader market.
Right, it's a broader market. We've been really successful in the family specialty toy store. They're loving Wyzalik because it gives them both the family option and the educational value. The mom looking for the educational value. And then, of course, all the educational stores, the schools are just loving it, and it's really giving a nice wide scope of buying power.
Of mumble what?
Of buying power. We're doing it. Oh, it's okay. Really outselling our game, so we're really thrilled with our...
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So you're having a good show?
We're having a great show.
You having a good time in New York?
We always have a good time. Girls at Gridley Games. We are the girls from Gridley Games.
Oh, yeah. See, you know, where were you guys when I was younger? All right. That'll be perfect. All right, so Looney Labs, you guys had an awesome 2009. Sales, as far as from my understanding, went through the roof.
We were up 21.8%.
Fantastic, which is games were up as a category 1%, but actually slightly higher than that. But even 21% growth is awesome. This is the first year you guys have had a double booth. Now, you guys previously had the little 10-foot booth. Now you're in 10 by 20. Do you think that's made a difference in the show for you as here at New York Toy Fair?
It absolutely has. This is our seventh year here, and it's our first year with the 20-foot booth. And our foot traffic has increased drastically because of it. We're getting way more attention. We're getting people to spend more time in our booth because they don't feel cramped and overcrowded.
Interesting, interesting. So are you getting more floor orders, you think, as a result?
Absolutely. By day two, we'd written more orders than last year in all 4 days.
Wow, that's awesome. So are the Amish buying from you guys?
Oh, we have had actually a bit of that as well.
Buying a lot of zombie flux, you think?
Not zombie flux, more like family flux in Aquarius. But because we print everything in America, and because everything's recycled and whatnot, they, right. You know, it was a good fit for them.
Excellent. And Andy stayed home this year?
Yes, he did, but he will be at the Gamma Trade Show.
Okay, all right, I'll have to go to Gamma to have him sign my card then. So.
Absolutely, he'll be there for you.
Okay, excellent. Well, Jessica Blair of Looney Labs, thank you very much for your time, Jessica.
Thank you.
Well, those are my interviews with Toy Fair game attendees. Hope you like them. And I would be remiss, though, if I did not mention the sponsorship that makes this show possible. And that is, one, Imagic Graphics, a fine U.S.-based printer of board games and card games. Let us print your game. And soon with Digital Press and also with partnership with a plant in China. So we got you covered 6 ways from Sunday. Other sponsor, PurplePawn.com, your source for game news. Awesome folks over there. And by the way, speaking of the Purple Pawn, David has asked me to stop teasing him about ditching us at Gen Con to go hang out with Dirk from the Board Game Geek. So, David, I apologize. I'm going to stop teasing you about it so that you won't tell everyone how I was hassled by the man on my way into game show or into Toy Fair. And finally, I'd like to thank the County Fair game. Printed this game about a year ago, and the folks over there were nice enough to let me use their booth at Toy Fair as my home base. Since I didn't have a booth this year, made my life a ton easier. So the countyfairgame.com. Thank you very much, Joanne and Leslie, for letting me use the booth. I really appreciate it. And folks, like I said, if you nicer people in the world, you will not meet. The County Fair game, if you think it's something that might fit in your store, give it a shot. Tell me about some upcoming stuff.
The upcoming stuff is, well, nothing.
Yay.
We're now past fourth quarter. We're now past the Toy Fair, and we're still way in front of Gamma. So for a while, we get to sit back and just talk business.
Thank goodness. Gamma's coming up. And, Rhett, I understand you've got a ride this year.
Yeah, I get to go to Gamma this year again. First time in 2 years. I didn't actually attend last year, but I have a number of invitations, so I'm not quite sure what capacity I will be attending Gamma at, but we will certainly be talking to people on the floor based
Excellent.
On that.
Well, it's good that you're going to represent Paper Money, because this is the first year in 2 or 3 years that I'm actually not going.
That's pretty amazing.
Give
me cards, and I'll even I'll pitch for you.
There you go.
I need another hat.
You can be my man pimp.
There you go. Hey, bye, Ben.
Yeah.
Our next show will be March 5th. Our topic will be miniatures.
It's a very small show.
It's a very short show. It's about 25 millimeters. We will be talking about how miniatures apply to you. Should you carry them in the store? What things should you carry? How to display them? If you have any questions on that topic before we get to it, please feel free to get in contact with us. We would love to pass that information on. We will also be having interviews with some of our miniatures manufacturers.
Well,
give us a little insight.
Yeah, and I want to, for all of our new listeners out there, don't panic if you're not a miniatures person. The whole show is not going to be about miniatures. We're still going to do the news at the top of the show. But our interview segment and our commentary, if we have time for any, is going to be miniatures focused, and we're going to talk about the business side of miniature gaming.
Well, that's all for this show. I'm Rhett Kipp.
And I'm Ben Clark. Thanks for listening.